All right. So last time, when we last left our heroes, we spoke about Shabbos. So this time we're talking about another similar topic. And we could do the same thing like we did last time. We can begin and end with like a very dry, boring, simple and straight presentation about the laws of brachos, which would be fantastic, I think. Or we could start with something a little different so we can kind of give some background as to why brachos are significant. And then we could talk a little bit about the show and tell items that we have here, some of which are very appealing, some of which are not so appealing, but we'll need to tackle them one at a time. We'll go with the latter. Okay, so there is a journal of personality and social psychology that presented the following observation a couple of years ago, that there is one key ingredient in relationship maintenance that is essential for furthering and maintaining relationship bonds. So what would that be? What would be a great ingredient to think about that is essential for maintaining relationships? And you can think about it in terms of spouses, children, more difficult, but certainly friends.
Communication.
Okay, communication. Very good. But we can communicate in a way that will make you feel very good, and we can also communicate in a way that might make you feel not so good. So that won't necessarily promote the fact that we communicate. So how we communicate, what we communicate about is going to be really important. So what message do I need to communicate to you or to somebody to maintain and to further a relationship? So what these psychologists, these researchers found is that gratitude, you're nodding, you're thinking that's a good idea? Makes sense, right? So the research has found that gratitude is actually a key, if not the key ingredient, in relationship maintenance.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Right? You go to school, let's say you're in fourth grade, so you go to school and you have your little lunch bag, and then the person next to you is constantly asking for things and never appreciates what you offer them. So after a certain point, that relationship that you have with that person kind of sours, it goes south, because there's no expression of appreciation that you feel from that person, right? So much about how that relationship is going to be formed doesn't necessarily revolve around whether or not you're giving or taking. It really revolves around how the giving and taking is going down. If you're always giving, but that person says thank you, so sometimes there's a place for that, you know? Some of us know people who are in that position. I remember before he passed away, my grandfather was he was unfortunately in the receiving end. But the relationship wasn't sour because he was so appreciative of the fact that we would help him put his shoes on, you know, and help him get dressed, all these kind of things. So it's not so much about giving and taking, it's about whether or not there is a sense of gratitude that's in part of relationship. So if we can all agree with that, if that makes sense, then now we can understand why brachos are so essential to the ingredients of a Jewish life. Because if our job is to bring godliness into the world, it's to cultivate a relationship with Hashem, to this entity that gives us everything that we have, so then to do that, that relationship needs to be characterized by gratitude. If you think about maybe the first mistake that appears in the Bible, in the Chumash, the first mistake, according to many interpretations, was not the fact that they ate from the fruit that they shouldn't have. It's that when Adam Arishon, the first man, was approached and said, excuse me, why did you eat from the first thing? What did he do? He threw his wife under the bus. Instead of saying, you know, I take responsibility for what I did, he took the gift that God had given him, which was a companion, and threw her under the bus. And so many explained, oh, that was the big mistake. The big mistake was that there was a lack of gratitude. So much about relationships is about gratitude. We think about that, you know, if we forget, let's see, if we forget our anniversary, which I have never done in the 11 plus years that we've been married, I have never forgotten our anniversary. If I were to forget our anniversary, that would probably be an issue. It wouldn't be, because an anniversary is an opportunity to express gratitude to that person for all the things that they've done for you over all these years. And so everybody wants to feel validated. That's the first thing psychologists and social workers will tell you. You want to feel validated, and a big piece of that validation is gratitude. So now we can understand why, when we say a bracha, and according to the tradition, the best thing is to shoot for 100 brachas a day. It's the first point that's like, wow, that's a lot of brachos.
Even a second point.
That's like a lot of brachos. Now, the truth is that if I say Shemona Esrei three times a day, so that's already, you know, a lot of brachos. It's 19 three times a day. That's almost 60, if you do the math, right? I think it's 57, if I'm not totally off, right? That's 57 brachos right there. But if you think about the requirement to say 100 brachos a day, it's almost impossible to say 100 brachos like in an hour, right? You can't configure any way you're going to make 100 brachos in an hour. So what's the idea that you're supposed to try to say 100 brachos a day? Well, it's got to obviously be spread out over the course of your whole day so that you're constantly being interspersed. This is an important teaching. I digress just for a second. We just had we observed the yard site of Dr. Martin Luther King not too far back, which is important because it's the time every year that we go to Florida. So we recognize that as a significant holiday in our calendar, in our house. But he gave a speech toward the end of his life where he coined a term, it's kind of a bizarre term, called maladjusted. You ever hear of this English word? You're familiar with it? Great.
I'm sure Alana's heard of it. I feel
maladjusted. Yes. So he talks about being maladjusted. The truth is that Judaism is very much about being maladjusted, because if you just go with the flow of life, so then you kind of fall into the doldrums of routine, and you need something to say, wait a second, you realize there's more to what you're looking at. There's something more significant in your life than just waking up in the morning, eating breakfast, going to work, going home, going to sleep. There's something more to it. That's what Judaism is all about. And interrupting your day actually is being maladjusted. So if Dr. King was here, he'd probably say, oh yeah, Judaism is about being maladjusted. So if you interrupt your life 100 times a day, you're obviously quite maladjusted. You can't, like, you're driving. This weekend we're going to see my sister-in-law in St. Louis. So you drive, like, through Nowheresville. You drive actually through a place called Normal. We saw this once. It's unbelievable. You know, it's bad enough that you're somewhere situated here between Wisconsin and Indiana. The next thing you know, you're in Normal. You're not even sure, am I or am I not? So you're driving through here. Now, in the old days when we lived on the East Coast, so you drive. Anybody here ever been to the New Jersey Turnpike? All right. Or if you drive to the East Coast, you drive through, if you get through Indiana, because they have the worst rest areas in Indiana. If you get to Ohio, you have very nice rest areas in Ohio. So here you are, you're hungry, at least I'm hungry about every 10 miles. So I get off the rest area and I walk in there and they have like a huge smorgasbord of like 15 restaurants that you could eat at. So before I can even get a morsel of food into my mouth, I have to be like 500 times maladjusted. Because the first thing I have to think about is, okay, so first of all, what's kosher? So even if I find something that's kosher, I have to figure out, am I milchig or fleishig? So that already is not so clear to begin with. You know, generally speaking, you want to be fleishig, but if you're traveling, so it's more convenient sometimes to be milchig. So now, I'm fleishig or milchig? Now I'm thinking, if I am fleishig, so how many hours have I waited? Okay, then I'm going to finally make my way to the front. I'm starving. I'm ready to put the food in my... No, wait a second. First, I have to start thinking, well, what bracha am I going to make on this particular food that I... You know, and usually comes in like a strange wrapping, because you can't just get regular food in America. Only in Israel can you get like real food in these places. By the time you've done all that, half the time you're just not hungry anymore. You just want to get back in the car. But the idea is all of a sudden you're maladjusted, and that is really what 100 brachos a day does for you. And it's essentially, it's like the best reminder for gratitude. So this is, there's a very prominent psychologist who, okay, for full disclosure, we are somewhat related. His name is Dr. David Pelkovitz, and he recently published a book about religion and psychology in conjunction with his father, who was a very accomplished rabbi. And he talks about what he calls the habit of attention. You know, we habituate to things all the time. We take for granted the things that we have, so we don't say thank you. We don't say thank you when you get used to something all the time. So to create a habit of attention is one of the goals of gratitude, and it's certainly one of the goals of Judaism, and certainly in terms of our relationship with Hashem. So one of the things he does, let's say on Friday night sometimes, and we've done this in the past, he does a gratitude exercise, like before benching, before the end of the meal, you say something that you're thankful for. And it sounds very cheesy and a little bit corny, but you know what? It's actually very meaningful. And the kids go along with it to a certain point. At least, if you coerce them to do it, they'll do anything right now. So, the idea of brachos is it's an opportunity to step back and say, wait a second, I appreciate the things which I've gotten, And the same way that I like the fact that somebody says thank you to me, so the Ribbono Shalom, God, recognizes that we're trying to build a relationship with him when we express this gratitude. So that's, I guess, observation number one, that the same way we want people to have a measure of gratitude to us, we need to express gratitude for the things that we have. And brachos are really a gift to be able to do that. Some people view them as a nuisance. I think they're a gift. Because before you partake of any of these delicious food items, so you're going to recognize that somebody gave it to you. Especially now, it's important to emphasize brachos, because it used to be you would have to appreciate what you had because you actually had taken the food, the bag of grain that could have been bread, you took it to the backyard and you threw it out and you hope that it's going to rain and you'll have some wheat for the next season. You literally felt the hand of God raising your crops out of the ground. But today, we just feel the hand of God making sure that we don't have a line at Jewel. You know, it's like, it's not such an experience where you go out and you plant and you harvest. Like, we don't have that anymore. We have supermarkets. We have Jewel up here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
A really good one. Kosher
stuff.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And they have better bags. Their brown bags have handles.
No, this is good. You have to have handles. Why don't our... The Howard Jewel doesn't have handles.
Anyway, so yeah, it's a very good book.
So this is observation number one. Okay, so let's talk about what the components of a bracha are very quickly. So the bracha begins with the word baruch. Where does that come from? It comes from the word brecha, like a stream, like a spring. So baruch doesn't mean we're going to bless God, we're going to endow God with anything. We can't endow God with anything. We're going to acknowledge that God is the source, the wellspring of everything in the world. So that's a good first step in gratitude. You know, we acknowledge that somebody is providing everything that we have. So that's, I think, just the baseline. But it's much more than that, because then we shift from Baruch, which could be more theoretical, to Ata, which is in the second person. That's you. Right? So this is an old Dale Carnegie Torah about the importance of knowing people's names and speaking to them directly. Everybody loves their name. Right? No one gets tired of their name. It's true. Everybody likes being spoken to. Everybody likes being addressed. Because when somebody speaks to you, they're endowing you with importance. You know, and that goes for every age. In the Kollel, we work a lot with the students and kids. And it doesn't matter how little they are, how small they are, they're future adults. So you got to treat them like people. They might be small. They might not be sophisticated, especially once they get to adolescent years, they might be fried for a little bit. But they are people. You know, even though they are adolescents, they are still people. So you have to speak to them with that kind of respect and that kind of relationship. So when we say Baruch, that God is the wellspring of everything, and then you say Atah, so now we're actually creating this direct relationship with Hashem. We're actually, so to speak, calling him by his name. And then you say Hashem. So that, I think, is the other critical element of a bracha, because God could be very ethereal, you know. God might be very present when you go up to Masada. It's like a sunrise and you feel like, wow, there's really a spirit of something here. But when I'm eating Pringles, you know, at 12:30 at night, maybe I don't necessarily feel that. But when I say Baruch Atah, so it's supposed to kind of give me a little tap, the maladjusted tap from Dr. King, to say, wait a second, this isn't just, you know, some kind of potato dust that was spit out of a machine and sold, you know, in Walgreens. This is really an opportunity to say God is a part of your life. So that's kind of like every bracha is going to start Baruch Atah Hashem, and then it's going to also say Elokeinu Melech HaOlam. It has to have the recognition that God controls everything, because otherwise, what are we saying? We're not acknowledging really anything. Okay? Until now, we are. Any questions, comments, or observations? Everyone's still awake? Great. Me too. So now, there are three kinds of brachos. And we can call them the before, the afters, and then the before and after. Three kinds of brachos. So the first kind of bracha is a bracha that you say to demarcate something as an act of holiness, as something special. If I went in the kitchen and I found, you don't happen to have any palm branches local this time of year? No. Okay. Citron? No.
Lemons.
Okay. Yeah, no. Not good.
She cares a lot. Around surface, there are a lot of
good. So if I went in the kitchen this afternoon and I found four species just because you happen to have them, You were getting an early start. It would be very early. But if I shook four species in the kitchen this afternoon, would that have any significance? No, it would have zero significance. So you're going to have to wait until it's Sukkot time to actually have significance to the fact that you're going to shake the four species. But what actually, and for me, actually is going to say, wait a second, the fact that I'm about to shake the four species is going to endow it with significance. What says, stop, what I'm doing now is important? It's the fact that I'm going to say a bracha before it. It's like a pause button that says, wait a second, what's going to happen now? The rabbi said that I need to demarcate this as a special activity. So, you know, you're going to prepare for Pesach. It actually has specific meaning in that context because every day I sit down to dinner, right? I could eat a sandwich. I could wash every night for dinner. And some people actually like matzah. My wife likes matzah.
This whole family likes matzah.
Yeah.
Matzah, if anyone wants.
That's fabulous. So why is it, let's say tonight, in the middle of the winter, we could be eating matzah for dinner and doesn't have any significance. So why would we say that where we're eating matzah at the Seder has some significance? The answer is the fact that you recite a bracha that demarcates this eating of matzah is different than every other night that you eat matzah in your house. So the first kind of a bracha is called a birchas hamitzvah. It's the blessing that's recited before the performance of a standard mitzvah, like before you light Shabbos candles Friday night. It's different than just lighting, you know, you have a candle lit in the back there. It's different than just lighting a candle in the kitchen on a regular evening. But what makes it different? The fact that it's a mitzvah. Well, how do you acknowledge the fact that it's a mitzvah? So you say a bracha before. So that's the before. Then there's the after. So there are times in our lives where we really feel a sense of overwhelming gratitude to God for things that He's given us. So let's say one occasion like this would be the birth of a child. So that's a pretty awesome and amazing and miraculous event. So after that, when you really feel that sense of amazement and wonderment, so you would recite a bracha, a response to that amazing event. Or there's an unusual phenomenon of nature. You go and you see the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean. So that is a remarkable phenomenon. It's an inspiring, an awe-inspiring event. So you respond with a bracha. Again, you're taking the ordinary. Absolutely everything is ordinary. The water, the sunrise, all those kind of things. And you're recognizing that there's something more to it, that there's godliness there. There's something much bigger. And so the response is a bracha. That's called a birchas shevach, praise, vehoda, and gratitude. So that's the after kind of bracha. And then there's a certain bracha that's the before and after. That's please and thank you. So that would be birchas hanen, and bracha on food. So before I sit down to the table, if somebody made me dinner, I should say, you know, please. And then when I finish, I should say, thank you. So before we eat, we acknowledge and we demarcate this meal as something that has significance. It comes from God. So we say a bracha, what's called a bracha rishona, an introductory bracha. And then afterwards, you say thank you. That's called bracha achrona. So that is how we kind of frame every time we eat something. If you don't do that, so that's pretty rude, isn't it? Right? Imagine I walked into the house and I said, lunch. Right? Maybe some of your kids do that sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to say what happens in our house, but they're like, supper, dinner, lunch, snack. Right? You're like,
use a sentence.
Right? Where were you raised? Why do you say that? You could say, please. You can say, you know, thank you. You gotta, you know, and at a certain point, it starts to grate on you when they keep doing that repeatedly. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's annoying, so we shouldn't be doing the same thing to God. And then, what happens when, without asking you, you know they're not supposed to be taking what they're taking, they go stick in their hands, and you say, no, 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 you can't have that. You didn't say, please. Right? You didn't ask. You didn't say, please. So too, the Gemara says, the Talmud says in Maseches Brachos, if you stick your hand in that box without saying, please, it's just like you're stealing. Same way, you don't want the kids sticking their hands in the food without asking. God says, don't stick your hands in the food without acknowledging it. It's so to speak, it's the equivalent of stealing. And that's how they resolve the problematic contradiction. Because on the one hand, the Pasuk says, the verse describes that everything belongs to God. La'ashem ha'aretz u'meloah. Everything belongs to God. And yet on the other hand, God says, va'aretz nasan levnei adam. He gave it to us. Well, is it His or is it ours? Which one? So the Talmud says, it depends. Before you make a bracha, it's all His. Hands off. After you recite a bracha, then it's yours. It's like the kids. If you if they say please, no problem. You can have a snack. I don't care if you have a snack. It's good. Everyone should have a snack. Should be a little healthy, not always junk, but okay. But if you don't say please, so then it's not yours. So that's the third kind of bracha. So you have the before brachas, brachas hamitzvos, you have the brachas shevach v'odah, the afterwards brachas, and then you have both. Because you have to make a bracha before you eat, and then after you eat. Because once you're full, you say thank you. So now that can break down, and what I'd like to do in the next few minutes that we have, the next 20 minutes, is to talk about, specifically about brachas hananin. Maybe we could stay for a couple of weeks and talk about all three kinds, but you probably have work to do, and my wife is going to wonder where I am. So let's focus tonight just on brachas hananin and talk about food-related brachas. So it happens to be that the origins of all brachas for food actually come from the bracha after you eat. That is the what we call a brachas hamazon, the benching. That's a Yiddishized version of that. Because there, you're really saying thank you for everything that you've got. But you also have the please component that comes before. So afterwards, it's primarily going to be benching. That's after you eat a real meal with bread. But beforehand, you're going to make a sequence of different brachas. So each of those brachas has specificity. And the greater specificity, the more significant the blessing is. Meaning, I could come to the table, and let's say it's dinner time, and there's a three-course meal Friday night, so there's soup, and then there's all kinds of dishes for the main, and then there's dessert. So I could, let's say my wife cooked the whole meal, and I could say afterwards, thank you for a delicious meal. So is that good? It's good. It's nice. But let's say she baked the challahs, and then she made the soup from scratch, and she also cleaned the chicken, and seasoned the chicken, and she cut the potatoes, v'chulu v'chulu. So I said to her, thank you so much because the challah was delicious, and the roasted potatoes were done perfectly, and I really liked the soup. It was spiced very well. That's one thing in my house. I could do all the vegetables. I don't spice the soup. She spices the soup. But the soup is spiced very well, etc., etc. So how's she going to feel about that compliment versus the first?
Much better.
Why?
More specific.
More specific. So why is more specific better?
More attention.
More attention to detail, right? It's the same thing. If on my wife's birthday, so I decided I was going to get her a gift, but instead of actually putting any thought into what I was going to get for her, I just kind of delegated it to the local Hallmark store. There is one not far from us. I said to them, look, I'll give you my credit card number. Here's $100. Do me a favor. Just find something. Find something. Write a card and have it delivered with flowers on such and such a date. That's not bad, right? No. You're not looking so happy about that. Why not? What's the problem? Oh, it's not very personal. Ah, so it would make a big difference if I actually spent some time to think about what she would like and what she could use, and I could write the card myself so that it would say something to her as opposed to like some generic card, you know, that they pulled out of one of these like stock phrases. So that's much more important. So the same thing is true in Elchos Brachos. All right? I'm not going to denigrate in any way the bracha of Shahako. It's a nice bracha. I just recited it on my cup of water. But the fact is, Shahakol, that's not your top bracha. Why? Because Shahakol is very, very expansive. Shahakol includes almost everything. So, you know, it's like getting up for a meal and saying, you know, thanks for everything. All right, that's very fine and good. But what if you were able to add a greater measure of specificity and focus and attention to the things that you're saying thank you for? Make sense? Okay. So if I'm eating things that grow from the ground, so that has a higher degree of specificity. So that's going to receive a Bori Priha Adama, but even more specificity is going to be things that relate to things that grow on the trees. So that would be like, I don't know, what grows on a tree? Apples and pears and... So that's going to distinguish one bracha from the next, because the things that grow from the trees are more specialized. It happens to be that sometimes... I try not to embarrass my wife, generally speaking, but sometimes I just can't help it. So we went a couple of months ago, we went to the We went to the Chicago Conservatory. You ever gone to this place? It's unbelievable. In Garfield Park, which maybe I was told afterwards isn't the nicest neighborhood, but who knew? You know, I just drove there. So, place is unbelievable. So I couldn't help myself because when we were in Garfield Park Conservatory, I actually saw a pineapple plant. So the guy who was like tending the little things over there, and I saw they also had a banana tree. So I was super excited. So I couldn't help myself. So I called the guy over. I said, I have to explain this to you. Do you know that in Jewish law, there's a distinction in the blessing on a banana from other trees? So he said, no, he's not Jewish. He didn't know anything about blessings. But I couldn't help myself. But I said, can you show me? Because the banana tree is very long. But he said, according to what I understand, a banana is not really a tree. He says, absolutely. Bang on it. So I did. So if you actually bang on the side of a banana tree, you will feel that it's hollow. It's not a tree. It's a shoot. Which is why the bracha on a banana is hadama, because the shoot dies and it doesn't replace itself. So I don't think he was as excited as I was when I told him all of this, because then I started with the pineapple, and then when I finished with the papaya, Nechama was like, we need to move on. This poor guy's going to try to get on with his life. But the reason why those things are important, actually, having seen the pineapple, you can understand. It grows very low to the ground. It actually looks like a bush, which it is. So that's why a pineapple is hadama. So you can understand why there's greater significance to the things that really grow on trees. And it's important to know what grows on a tree and what doesn't. Okay, so now we covered shahakol, hadama, ha'etz. And now you're going to get to bori pri hagafen. So bori pri hagafen is unique because wine has special qualities. It brings people joy to a certain measure. After that, it brings a lot of sadness, depending on where you go with it. But it brings, ostensibly, it brings joy. That's what the Gemara says. Plus, it fills a person up. People have just wine parties. I'm not a big wine connoisseur. Maybe some people here are into, some people drink wine. White wine, red wine, dry wine.
Sounds good.
No? I don't know. If you spill it, it will feel like something. It's not totally dry. You know what I mean? It's like, it's wet, but it's on some level they say it's dry. So that has a much greater level of significance, which is why the rabbis ascertained that if you want to mark an occasion, so you make a l'chaim. So the best thing to do is when you have a special occasion like Shabbos or Yom Tov or a wedding or a bris or a Sheva Brachos, so you make a l'chaim. And that's why you have that also for the four cups at the Seder, which is really the epitome of L'chaim, because you're feeling freedom. And for that reason, certain rabbis are opposed to the use of grape juice at the Seder, because they say nobody makes L'chaim except for me on grape juice. Right? That's just not the standard practice. Generally speaking, it's accepted. Plenty of people, myself included, drink grape juice at the Seder. But in principle, Bori Pri Hagafen is a L'chaim. It's supposed to be a more noble and exciting bracha. So that's why that's upgraded. So the last and most significant brachas are the brachas on the mainstay of the food. Remember, if you're living especially in old antiquity, so the mainstay of your meal was bread. Right? Today, that's a total no-go. Right, everybody has washophobia. Nobody wants to eat bread. Nobody wants to wash. Nobody wants to bench. It's like the worst thing, either because it has problems with carbs. Some reason carbs are bad. Or it's not the carbs. It's such a headache. You have to wash. You have to bench. Nobody likes bread anymore. And because we live in a wealthy society in America, you don't have to sustain yourself on bread. But if we lived in a poor society, so then bread would be the mainstay of your day. And then you had something to dip it in. So you had bread with ketchup for lunch. And then you had bread with potatoes for dinner, and that was, you know, life in Eastern Europe. Great. I mean, ketchup was on good days. So we very much are not so connected with this idea that bread is the staple of your meal, but traditionally, especially in poor countries, you can't get along without eating bread. You can't. That's the mainstay of your meal. And therefore, the rabbis understood that that's going to have the most significant bracha, both beforehand and after, because that provides the greatest sustenance in terms of being full, right? You have this problem sometimes. You can eat salad. I'm not saying there's anything bad about eating salad. Salad is fine. You know, it's all right. But like, how many bowls, plates full of salad do you need to eat to become full? You know what I'm saying? You know, how many bags do you need to finish to be full? As opposed to if you have one bagel, that goes a long way. So there's no question that satiation and bread are correlated with each other. I'm not saying you should eat bread or you shouldn't, and you should eat salad or you shouldn't. That's your, you know, everybody's going to decide about that on their own. But I will tell you that salad is not as filling as bread. No?
True.
That's true. Like it or not. So therefore, the rabbis decided that hamotzi is going to be the highest level of bracha, and then if you're not eating actual bread, if you're eating something that's made out of the five grains, so that would be generally accepted as wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. So then those grains, if they're made into a dish, or a cracker, a snack type of thing, so that's going to be a bor minei mezonos, and they tacked on another small category, which also is pretty filling, but it doesn't quite have the same process of fermentation with yeast and all that kind of stuff, and that's rice. So rice gets a mezonos because it's filling, right? You can eat like a sushi if it has rice in it. You can eat a couple of rolls and then you're going to be full. But if you eat just the regular fish, I mean, how many pieces of regular fish would you have to eat just fish to be full? I assume a few pounds or something. No? I mean, if you didn't have any rice in there. So therefore, if what you have now is the rice as a filling agent, so therefore it makes sense why rice is also going to get a bar minimum zonos, and that's what the Talmud concludes in Maseches Brachos. Okay? So far, so good? All right, so let's talk about two specific subcategories, areas in the halacha that relate to these kind of brachos. So the first one is called Ikar V'Tofel, because sometimes you have a question, we discussed this once at your house a little bit, Tammy, question of Ikar V'Tofel, when you have two items that are supposed to get a bracha, and then they are served together. Well, how many brachos do you make? So imagine, let's say you have these fine-looking rice cakes. So, so first of all, there's going to be a question about whether or not these things are going to be mezonos or hadama, depending on actually how they're going to be manufactured. But let's assume, let's say they were crackers, and for sure they're going to be mezonos. Let's assume it's mezonos. Let's say they're crackers. So it's going to be mezonos on the crackers. And then in the fridge, I have cream cheese, and I'm going to spread cream cheese on the crackers. So the problem is that my cream cheese comes from milk, which is a shahakal product. So now I have a question. Am I making shahakal? Am I making mezonos? Am I making shahakal and mezonos? Okay, so that's one question. So then let's move on. Let's go back to our friendly salad. So sometimes people make salad and they put the most, excuse my language, most bizarre things in the salad. You know what I'm saying? They put mangoes in there and they put, in our house, my wife likes to put in hearts of palm. It's awful. Stuff is god awful. So they should put hearts of palm. So you have hearts of palm, you have mangoes, you have cherries, you have strawberries, you have the whole kitchen sink in there. So now my problem is I'm trying to figure out what bracha to make on this thing, because I'm looking at it and the base is lettuce. So my lettuce is going to be bor pri ha'adamah. And then my weirdo ingredients, many of them are ha'etz, like mango, for example. So if I have mango in there, I'm going to make a bor pri ha'etz on the mango. So let's say I have mangoes and the salad, and I have some seeds, and they throw in there just for the crunch factor. So what bracha do I make on all of this? So these are two different categories that we call a taruvus, a mixture. The first category is a mixture that's made up, that's kind of by convenience. They're served together. That would be a classic example, would be right here. This is your classic mixture. They're put together. You can deconstruct them very easily. That's a mixture. That's a mixture out of convenience. You have cream and you have cookies. That's one kind of a taruvus. But then you have another kind of taruvus, which might be the salad. And even if you take it to a further extreme, let's say chalent. So chalent, you really have a mixture, and it's not just a mixture that's put together on the plate. It's not even just a mixture that's put together in the kitchen. It's actually a mixture that's cooked together. So both of these kinds of mixtures, ones that are, you know, manufactured, kind of easily deconstructed, and the ones that are more inherent, you have the same principle, and that is you have to follow what is the main ingredient. And whatever is the main ingredient, when you have a mixture, either you're eating it together just because that's the way you want to eat it, because like you have your cracker with your with your shmear on it, or you have your Oreo cookies, that's the way you want to eat it, or because that's the way the dish is composed, the salad is composed, it's all mixed together, and they're little pieces, it's not like you have one giant piece, and the same thing with the chon, you have barley mixed in with the beans and the meat, that's all mixed together, so you follow the main ingredient. Well, how do you decide what the main ingredient is? How are we going to figure that out? So it depends. Sometimes you're going to decide. Let's say, this could happen. Sometimes on Saturday night, there's leftover Romanian liver in the fridge. Right?
That
was good. Happen. So then, now, let's say it's like 12 o'clock on Saturday night. Everybody else is sleeping, so no one's going to see you. And you're really going to have some of that Romanian liver for a snack. So now the question is, it could happen.
It would. Yeah,
it could happen. It could happen. I'm not saying it's ever happened to me once, more than once. But now here's the problem. You're not going to eat the Romanian liver with your hands, even though nobody's up. And you're really not going to eat it with a spoon, because it's kind of like it doesn't have the right texture if you just eat Romanian liver with a spoon. So what do you need?
Cracker.
You need a cracker.
So what's so terrible about
it?
What's so bad about it?
So the answer is that because since you're only eating it in one bite, it's unnecessary. The rabbis decided that it was not necessary because it's really become one food. Like these Oreos, yeah, you could deconstruct it, eat it separately, and you would say two brachas. But once you're eating it as one, so it's really not necessary. So let's say you just grab the cracker, but the only reason you need the cracker is because you can't swallow all that liver in one shot without something crunching your mouth. So then the only reason that you're eating the cracker is just to get it down. So then both on the cracker and on the liver, you say just shahakol. Because you decided that the liver is really what you want and you don't really want the cracker at all. You're not interested. If nobody was there and it really wouldn't matter, you would be just as happy to eat it with your hands. But you're not going to do it because it's just, and it doesn't really. So it's possible to only make that one bracha. The same question will become, let's say you have sushi and somebody serves you a piece of sushi and the way that it's constructed is one giant piece of fish. And on top and underneath it, they just have a little slice of cucumber just for a decoration. You don't really want the cucumber at all. But you eat the whole thing because it's rude to leave the cucumber on the table for whatever reason. So then the only bracha that you recite on that piece of sushi is going to be shahakol. Because the only reason you're eating it is for the fish. So now, let's say you want everything. You want the fish and you want the cucumber. You want them both. So in that case, you have to follow the majority. So if you have a giant piece of sushi and a little bit of cucumber on the bottom, so when you eat that all together, so the bracha is going to be shahakol. Make sense? Because if you want both of it, how do you decide what the main thing is? You're going to figure out based on what is the majority. Whatever is the majority, that's going to be considered the main thing. Okay? So the same thing is going to be for my salad and my stuff that's mixed in there. If it's all going to come up in one spoon, so I'm going to make one bracha. You're right. Sometimes you have like a gigantic thing in your salad and the only thing that comes up in your spoon is that thing. So then you have to make a separate bracha because it's clearly distinct and separate from the rest of your salad. But if everything is coming up in one spoon, so what's the one bracha you're going to make on your salad? So I guess what's the majority of your salad? It's probably going to be Hadamah, because the majority is probably going to be the stuff that's mixed in there. Someone had a question, comment, observation?
We're just debating if we really want the cracker with the liver.
So sometimes you really do want the cracker because it's crunchy and it's good, so then you probably would make, we'll get to that, mezonos is going to be a rule breaker in a minute. But yeah, that would be an example. Okay?
Debate over what's the most important. Right?
Right.
That's right.
I agree. It is. We want the sense it was so much. We need to make
right. We would just make two buckles. We would just
yeah. Make two buckles and a fat and a buckle and a fat.
So, if you're going to eat them separately first, you could, but really, there's no need to. You really are just as good.
But what if you're trying to get to 100 per day? Why not?
So, the answer is the rabbi said it's good to get to 100 per day, except you don't want to make unnecessary brachas because they become then meaningless. You know, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And they're like, you know, excuse me, you thank me enough. You know, there has to be in the appropriate context. Exactly. So let's say, Shabbos afternoon, in our house we have Shabbos party. So the purpose of Shabbos party, the Gemara says, originally was to get extra brachos, because you have lots of snacks, so you have extra brachos on Shabbos, because Shabbos, your Shemona Esrei is shorter, so you're in need of extra brachos, so that's why Shabbos party helps you out. But you can't just keep making the same shahakol over and over. So you need a shahakol, you need a hadama, so you can get some extra brachos in there. If you don't, that's what's referred to as a bracha she'ina tzricha, an unnecessary bracha. So this now, before we move on, explains a lot of the other items that are on the table here. For example, this right here, this is a good example. Here you have a triple taruvas. This is crunchy rice and wheat flakes with real strawberries. And they are real strawberries, I've eaten them. So right here in this taruvas, what do you have? You have mizonos, you have hadama, and you have shahakol. But you only make one bracha. What bracha is that? The majority of the thing is mizonos. So you only recite the bracha of mizonos. Same thing over here. If you have this soup thing, so the majority of what's in here is mizonos.
Salt.
Right?
Yeah.
It says the first ingredient, enriched wheat flour. Wheat flour, thymine. I'm afraid to read what else it says. In here. Whatever it is. So that's going to be the majority. But there is one catch. And that is, okay, we talked about when you have a main ingredient and a non-main ingredient, but then you have something else, and that's, let's say, where you have a mixture. So, let's say in this example right here, which I pulled out of the freezer, these Morningstar Farms chicken nuggets. So their main ingredient is textured vegetable protein, and then they have parentheses what that means. And then they tell you they have water, enriched wheat flour, and then iron and a bunch of other ingredients. So when I see this, so I'm thinking, what bracha am I going to make on here? So there is wheat flour in here, so that would be mizonos, but the first ingredient is textured vegetable protein, so that's going to be shahakol. So the Gemara says there's one rule breaker, and that's going to be a good question here. That is usually, you're right, when it comes to one item and you have to decide what the bracha is going to be, you follow the main ingredient. Except, we said before that wheat provides the main sustenance in the person's diet. Well, if that's the case, then when you have wheat as an ingredient, so that becomes the star of the show. In a mixture case. Not necessarily in the case where you're just eating the cracker to get to the liver. In the case of the mixture, where you have a bona fide mixture, then the wheat takes over. Okay? However, the Talmud, and they explain later by the rabbis, that this is only in a case where the wheat is providing the goal that we said, what's special about wheat? What did we say is special about wheat? That it provides?
Sustenance.
Right. But what if the wheat is only there as a binding agent? Ah, amazing. How did you know this was going to come?
I just
thought, yes.
I want to make Shabbos. I don't know.
Phenomenal. So you're machavein to this tshuva. I love this. There was a great Hasidic master. He was born in 1838. He died in 1910. His name was Rav Avram Borenstein from Sochachov. And he wrote some very, very famous responsa called Avnei Nezer. Many volumes of important responsa. He has one responsa in Hilchos Brachos about meatballs. What bracha do you make on meatballs? But the best part of the tshuva, he describes what he says. He says, "Chakarti etzel ha'osim maichal hazeh." I asked the people who make this food, and at the end he says, "Ve'imi amrali." My mom told me. This, I'm not making this up. This is in the tshuvas. He says, "My mother told me." Shehakavona gam kein shiyah hanifuach rav. The purpose of the flour and the meatballs is just to make them fluffy. The Shaila was about an older person, an old man, who was given meatballs, basar tachun, mu'urav bo kemach. It had some wheat mixed into it, and the reason why they put the wheat into the ground beef was so it would be much easier to chew. If he had just ground beef, it would be much too dense. So they asked the Avni Nezer, the holy Chassafa Chava Rebbe, what bracha do you make on the meatballs? So he says, I checked with these chefs, and I also checked with my mother, and they all said that the purpose is just to give it that fluffiness. And if that's the case, then the bracha is shahakol. Same thing, there's a big discussion about Twizzlers. What bracha do you make on Twizzlers? So what do you think? So this is a debate. So some rabbis say that the bracha on Twizzlers is shakol, because the wheat is really just primarily a binding agent. And others say, no, the taste of the Twizzler, the consistency is really there because of the fact that the wheat is giving it that structure. So others actually say mezonos on the Twizzlers because it has wheat in it. Similarly, the Rambam says that if it's for just the look, the tseva, the color. So I was going to ask, what do you think? It's not so clear to me. What role does the wheat play in these chicken nuggets? Is it only ledevek? Is it just as a binding agent? Is it just for color? Or is it really more for sustenance? And the practical difference, and with this we're going to conclude, it's 9 o'clock already, the practical difference is whether or not on these things you make a mezonos or you say shahakol. So if you tell me that it's just a thin coating on the outside to make it look good, then you would say the bracha is shahakol. Or if you say no, part of the flavor and part of the filling nature of these chicken nuggets is that they don't want just a slab of textured vegetable protein. They also want that coating on the outside, so then it's going to be bar mitzvah mezonos. The same question comes up when it comes to potato knishes. Oftentimes, depending on how it's made, you have like a big lump of mashed potato in the middle, and then you have the wrapping of dough on the outside. So depending on how thin and how that crust is constructed and why it is, that will determine whether or not your potato knish is going to be hadama, if it has chunky potatoes inside, or it's going to be mezonos. So to summarize, we introduced tonight with a general theme about developing a relationship with God and using brachos as the maladjuster, as the reminder of how to cultivate that relationship with Hashem. And we spoke about Baruch being the source of blessing, and then Atah creating that direct relationship. We spoke about three kinds of blessings: Berachas HaMitzvos that come before, Berachas Shevach VeHodah, praise and thanks that come after, and then food brachos that come before and after. We talked about the different strata and schedule of brachos, and then in terms of identifying brachos, so we spoke about Ikar V'Tofel. So let's say if you have corn checks, which are Hadama, and you put them together in a bowl with milk, so you're going to say Bori Pri Hadama on that mixture. And the same thing is going to be true with the special K. The one rule breaker is going to be what we call Kol She'esh Bo. If it has the wheat in it, so if the wheat is for the purpose of satiating, filling you up, so then even if it's in the minority, it's also going to take over and it's going to have the Bracha Mezonos. Yes?
Question.
Yeah.
So corn checks and that would be hadama, and you mix it with milk, it still stays hadama. What about something that I think of in this house is you mix that with soy butter, peanut butter, and chocolate.
Okay.
And clearly you want to serve.